You're listening to a Peak Media production.
And now, coming to you from the Windy City, it's the Daily Dime with your host, Tim Keller.
Welcome, everyone, to this Monday edition of the Daily Dime. Today is November 28th, and we have so much to talk about after this weekend. The NBA season kicked off, the World Series is underway, then we had a ton of massive college football games and a crazy slate across the NFL. We've only got 10 minutes, so let's jump right into it. So I wanted to start off with the MLB, where we had Game 1 of the World Series on Friday night. The Dodgers struck first in the fifth on a sac fly, but the Yankees came right back in the sixth, and they took the lead with a two-run homer from Stanton, who has just been on fire this postseason. LA then tied it up at two apiece in the eighth on a sac fly from Mookie Betts that scored Ohtani, and then neither team scored in the ninth, so we went to extras in Game 1 of the World Series. And in the top of the 10th, Jazz got on, and then he stole second, and he stole third before scoring on a fielder's choice that Anthony Volpe bobbled. And it was looking like the Yankees might steal Game 1 in LA, but then in the bottom half of the inning, the 8 and 9 hitters both got on for the Dodgers, bringing up Ohtani. He ended up fouling out, so the Yankees intentionally walked Betts to load the bases, bringing up Freddie Freeman in a scenario that literally every single kid dreams of. You're behind in extra innings in the World Series. Bases are loaded. There's 50,000 fans, all of them watching you, millions more watching at home, and he just annihilated the first pitch, a 409-foot no-doubter to right field that sent the place into an absolute frenzy. I mean, how can you not be romantic about baseball? But that was just Game 1. We also had Game 2 on Saturday, and this one was a lot less dramatic. Edmund homered for LA in the first to give them a 1-0 lead before a Soto homer tied it in the third. Two more homers for the Dodgers in the bottom half of the third pushed their lead to 4-1, and that would be the score until the ninth, where the Yankees tacked on one more, but it was too little, too late, as they would lose 4-2 and go down 0-2 in the series as they now head back to New York for Game 3. And that game is actually tonight at 8:08 Eastern, with the Yankees opening as the early favorites, so we will see if they are able to avoid a 3-0 hole and make this one an actual series. We also had the NBA kicking off this past week, and we had a really cool moment where LeBron and Bronny James became the first father-son duo to play in the NBA together. And this also got me thinking about some of the other father-son duos that didn't necessarily play together, but had both played in the league at one point. And then I wanted to see what their combined point totals were. So there were a few notable ones out there. The first was Kobe and his dad. They combined for almost 39,000 points. Klay and his dad combined for about 28,000 points. And the greatest shooter of all time, Steph Curry, and his dad, who played in the league for 16 years, have combined for about 36,000 points. But it really puts it in perspective how ridiculous LeBron's stats are now that him and Bronny have combined for about 40,500 points, but Bronny still hasn't scored yet. I'm sure he'll get on the board at some point this season, but LeBron is just in a league of his own when it comes to some of these records. But anyway, most of the teams in the league have played about three games so far, so still very early in the season, but there are about four or five teams that have really stood out to me so far. In the West, actually, LeBron and the Lakers, they're 3-0 for the first time since he moved to LA. The Warriors won their first two games by a combined 77 points, and the Thunder have also been super dominant with Chet and SGA leading the way for them. And then over in the East, the Cavs and the Celtics are both 3-0, and they've already outscored their opponents by a combined 110 points. So those are the four or five teams that have kind of separated themselves a little bit to begin the season, but again, it's still really early, so we'll see if they're able to keep that up. But anyway, I really wanted to talk about the football slate from this weekend, so we'll start off in college, and I actually want to talk about a game that was on Thursday between Syracuse and 19th-ranked Pitt. There was a lot of hype around the Orange coming into the season because their schedule wasn't too tough. A lot of people thought they might be able to sneak into the playoff, and they got OSU transfer Kyle McCord at quarterback, so they had this really great chance to make a statement on the road against the 19th-ranked team in the country and really make a push towards the playoff, but they just had a complete meltdown in the first half on Thursday night. They had four interceptions in the first half from McCord, three of them returned as pick sixes, and they weren't as bad in the second half, but McCord threw a fifth interception interception in the fourth quarter, and they just had no chance at that point. Pitt went on to win 41-13, and they are now 7-0 on the season, and Syracuse's playoff hopes are all but over. But looking at some of the other notable games, number one Oregon routed number 20 Illinois at home 38-9, and the other Big Ten teams in the top five really struggled, as OSU and Penn State both came out with ugly victories against Nebraska and Wisconsin. They actually play each other this upcoming week in Happy Valley, and we'll see if either team can pull it together after the mess that was this week. OSU will be without Arvell Reese for the first half since he was ejected for targeting in the second half against Nebraska. And then Penn State quarterback Drew Aller, who's actually from Ohio, but he didn't play the entire second half against Wisconsin after he suffered what they're calling a lower body injury. So not sure exactly what that is, not sure what the severity is, but we'll see if he's able to suit up. But that could be a huge loss for the Nittany Lions if he is not able to go. This game has huge playoff implications with Penn State at 7-0, Ohio State at 6-1. They already have that loss that they had at Oregon, and they both likely need to win this game to make it to the Big Ten Championship. So huge game coming up. We'll see which team is able to pull it together. But looking at some of the other big games this week, Texas struggled on the road at Vandy, but they still came away with a 27-24 win. Miami crushed Florida State 36-14 as they move to 8-0 on the season now. And Florida State is just 1-7, just crazy after they started 13-0 last year. Texas A&M outscored 8th-ranked LSU 31-6 in the second half to improve to 7-1 on the year. And then Notre Dame crushed previously undefeated Navy 51-14 in MetLife Stadium. We also had Indiana. They improved to 8-0 on the season on Lee Corso Day as they beat Washington 31-17. And 15th-ranked Alabama crushed 21st-ranked Missouri 34-0. And in my mind, Mizzou is just always one of those teams that just feels super overrated to me just because they're in the SEC. And in my mind, they have no business being in the top 25, essentially ever. I mean, they had a decent season last year. They beat Ohio State's JV team in the bowl game, but they never really show up when it matters. And these middle-of-the-pack SEC schools just drive me nuts. They just ride the coattails of the real players at the top. Kentucky's the same way. Arkansas is the same way. You can pick out about three other teams in any given season who are propped up to make the conference look better, so they all have ranked wins at the end of the season. It's a joke, but I digress. Anyway, speaking of jokes, thank God the Lions are great because the quality of college football in the state of Michigan is awful. I watched some of the Michigan State-Michigan game on Saturday night, and they basically set the sport back 65 years. The team up north won 24-17, but yuck, that was a hard watch. Then over to the NFL, we had a great Sunday slate where the aforementioned Lions dominated the Titans 52-14. The Lions only had 94 passing yards somehow, but they just owned this game from start to finish. Despite the lack of yards, they still threw for 4 touchdowns, including one from David Montgomery to Sam Laporta, and then they also ran for 164 yards and another 2 scores. The Cardinals walked it off with a game-winning field goal to beat the Giants 28-27. The Packers also had a game-winning field goal as they beat the Jags 30-27. The Eagles outscored the Bengals by 20 in the second half to win 37-17 as they ran away with that one. Kirk Cousins threw 4 touchdowns as the Falcons beat the Bucks 31-26 for their 5th win of the season. The Texans held on to beat the Colts 23-20, and the Chargers dominated the Saints 26-8 as the rookie Ladd McConkey out of Georgia had a breakout game with 6 catches for 111 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then the Browns had a shocking upset as they beat the Ravens 29-24 in Jameis Winston's first start in over 2 years. He threw for 334 yards and 3 touchdowns in Watson's absence, and this looked like a completely different team with him at the helm. We then had a wild witching hour as the Bills won a super sloppy game against the Seahawks up in a really rainy Seattle 31-10. The Broncos beat the Panthers 28-14 in a game that I don't think a single person outside of Denver cared about. Then in another AFC West game, the Chiefs improved to 7-0 with a 27-20 win over the Raiders. And then the best game of the day was between the Bears and the Commanders in DC. Washington was up 12-7 with less than a minute left. The Bears end up scoring with 25 seconds left and get the 2-point conversion, so they go up 15-12. Looks like they're going to win. The Commanders were able to complete a few short passes just to get into like reasonable Hail Mary range. And then on the last play of the game, Jaden Daniels gets the ball. He's scrambling back and forth for like 13 seconds, I think it was, before he heaves up a pass towards the end zone. ends up getting tipped right in front of the goal line, and then it comes down in the hands of Noah Brown, who is standing behind the pile for a touchdown. Just an insane play to end the game, ripping the hearts out of all the Bears fans' chest across the country. Just a crazy way to end the afternoon slate. But then we closed out the weekend with the Sunday night game between the Cowboys and the 49ers. And the Cowboys looked strong in the first half of this one as they held the Niners to just two field goals as they took a 10-6 lead into the break. But then the Niners outscored Dallas 21-0 in the third, and it looked like they would run away with this one. But in a true game of runs, Dak threw two touchdowns to CD in the fourth to cut the lead to 30-24. They then got the ball back late, but they could not convert, and that would be the final, with the Cowboys falling to 3-4 and the Niners improving to 4-4, tied with Arizona and Seattle, and just a half game ahead of the Rams in the NFC West. But with that, we will just about wrap it up for this Monday episode of The Daily Dime. As always, thank you for listening, and if you would, please consider following the show and rating 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you may listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow. See ya.